Christchurch's Court Theatre is the last one standing of the first wave of professional theatres set up in New Zealand in the 60s and 70s. It proudly celebrates its 50th birthday on the 21st of April. Felicity Price, a long-time patron and board member, has written a history of the much-loved theatre. It follows the court from its origins to its numerous different homes over the decades to some of its most memorable actors and productions. 50 years of the Court Theatre includes dozens of interviews with people who've been on stage and behind the scenes, and that includes longtime artistic director Alaric Hooper. I spoke to Felicity and to Derek Hargreaves, whose own writing about his 47 years as secretary to the Court Theatre Trust forms the backbone of the book. Derek recalls working alongside the Court's two founders, Yvette Bromley and Mervyn Thompson.
I was a young accountant, and she gathered about her a number of businessmen and businesswomen about town and spoke to the mayor, Ron Guthrie, and that was sort of the catalyst that got everything going. And she said, I want a young accountant in to help and also a young lawyer. And the young lawyer was Chris McVeigh. So that was my first introduction to what was to be the Court Theatre.
Yvette Bromley was a real force of nature, shall we say, wasn't she?
Well, she was. She was originally from UK, and she came and her husband came out after the Second World War. And Yvette taught drama at Christ College in Rangiruru. But she wanted to set up a professional theatre company in Christchurch. There was one in Auckland and one in Wellington, and even Dunedin had the Globe Theatre. So she said, we must have a professional company here, and that's what she set out to do.
Felicity, what was the model that Yvette was working towards? Because there were several, and the company structure, you know, having a company of actors that were used for the different plays, was one that the Court ran for a very long time.
In the very start, I think she just wanted to get the plays on the road. She wanted to get them in the theatre. And the trouble was, of course, that you could have as much vision as you like. She didn't have anywhere to put them. Everyone desperately tried to find somewhere. And eventually they found the Provincial Council Chambers, which is where they did the first play, The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie, which I do remember seeing in 1971. And it was in this huge neo-Gothic building, a little bit like a church, totally inappropriate for a theatre, and they had to cart the chairs for the audience in and all the sets and everything from up the road where they were at the old Durham Street Art Gallery, and then cart them all back at night. So I think the preoccupation with everyone, apart from trying to make enough money to keep going, was where to put the plays on, and that, as you'll see from the history, was their preoccupation for some years until they finally found the Art Centre.
No shortage of ideas, Derek, for plays, though. I think Yvette had a very strong vision of the kinds of plays that she wanted to produce. I mean, you mentioned The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie as the very first production of The Court, for example.
Well, yes, she liked a varied repertoire. And initially it was set on the repertoire of what was then the Royal Court Theatre in London, in UK, and that was known for its advanced work and new works that were coming out at the time. And really the name of the court was taken from the Royal Court in London, but also, of course, from the courthouse where we set up the very, very first play. She went for a balanced repertoire, but we mustn't forget Mervyn Thompson, who was her co-founder, who came in with his own repertoire, which was very much Indigenous New Zealand and self-made work with a lot of students, and he wrote a couple of plays himself. But the blockbuster play that really set us up was a production he did of King Lear. He came back from UK where he'd been, and in the second year we were on, he put on a grand King Lear. He said, we've got to do a large bookmark play that will set us on the right professional road, and it certainly did. It was a very good production and caught the attention of the Arts Council.
What made it so remarkable? I mean, I've seen the photos, here's some photographs of it in the book. What do you think made it such a landmark production?
Well, most of the people in it had been trained and taught at the University Drama Society under Niall Marsh, so they were all very good Shakespearean actors that were going to be there, or well trained by Niall. And Niall was also on the Trust Board, so that was a great influence on the early days as well as the theatre, and it certainly was a production to be remembered.
One of the best most popular plays they put on was O Temperance, which he wrote and directed and had a lot of young drama students in it. But it was this balanced program that continued on at the court until today, really. It was Elric followed the same line of, you know, balancing plays that would bring in lots of people, the popular plays, the Ladies' Night, the Roger Halls, with other plays that, like, for example, Shakespeare, that had would have had over 20 actors in it sometimes and didn't necessarily bring in the big audiences. And it was that balance that I think has been, that Yvette and Mervyn started, has been the success of the court, which now is the largest and longest running professional theatre company in New Zealand.
When you talk about the professional aspect to this, I was very taken when you were writing about how the cast of that first play for Jean Brodie were rather unhappy about being asked to sign a contract and commit themselves. I guess this really was something different for actors who until then had not been professional.
Yeah, well, that's right. And Yvette was determined that the theatre would be professional so that everyone would be paid and that professional help would be paid as well. And she really was quite strong about that because previous attempts to set up companies within Christchurch or indeed New Zealand had relied on getting star performers in, you know, the leads would be paid and none of the minors cast would be paid. They'd be made up of local rep people and not paid. So she was determined to get away from that sort of model. That was very important to her.
Who were some of the actors, Felicity, who were around in that, say, maybe that first 10 years or so?
The most well-known ones were the ones like Mervyn or Sticky Glue, who was legendary in Christchurch, and Gerald Lassels, Stuart Devaney.
Liz Moody, who was Yvette's daughter, was a power on the stage, as was Judy Douglas. And the initial run of Glide Time, one of Roger Hall's great plays, most successful, and the only female in the cast was Judy Douglas. And so she was in many, many court productions.
And, of course, Elric was an actor long before he became the artistic director, so he was in a lot of productions too.
Let's come to Elric then, because he was such a driving force of that theatre for such a long time. What skills did he bring? What vision did he bring to the court theatre that turned it around? I think you make the point in the book that the year before he came on board, there'd been something like a $25,000 loss. It's a lot of money in the 70s, but he was able to turn it around.
Well, he was very clever at picking the programme, the repertoire, to keep the audiences faithful and keep them interested. And in his first year, he set up what he called the Stagioni system, where plays were selected and based around a theme, you know, love and war, and he made the plays have a link all together, and this fascinated the audiences, so they could get some balance in what they saw and compare these plays. He was an extremely good director and a very, very good trainer of actors. He was brought up in the old tradition so that actors should be heard from every part of the stage, even if they weren't facing front stage. And he did a lot of voice training classes and classes with actors quite outside his duty as director. And he was determined that he would have a truly professional cast for every play.
He also, sometimes against his will, put in comedies and modern ones like Roger Hall. And this was before New Zealanders had really been able to laugh at themselves on the stage. And along came the first Roger Hall plays, and they were phenomenal. So, and Elric knew that if the theatre was making a loss, all he had to do was program a Roger Hall, and suddenly that loss turned around to a profit, a big profit.
One of the things I remember from all the court productions I've seen over the years, and again looking at the photographs in the book, is the quality, the work that went into, and money, of course, that went into the sets and into the costumes. I mean, that was taken incredibly seriously, wasn't it? And still is.
Yes, and as I understand it, the court was, and I think probably Derek still is, the only theatre in New Zealand that has its own set design department, costume design department, wardrobe, makeup, all that sort of thing. It's all done in-house. And yes, and I wouldn't say no expense was spared because they did a lot of it on the smell of an oily rag. But by dint of knowing how to make things look real on stage, they were able to produce in the workshop backstage some fabulous sets and costumes, many of which are still in storage, and some have been brought out of storage and are still at the court backstage.
Two just sprang to mind immediately, one being Pamela Mailing, who made the most amazing costumes out of all sorts of materials, old curtains, and they look magnificent on stage. And the other was Peter Lees Jeffries, who was also on the board, but an extremely talented designer, and some of his costume designs and set designs were just amazing.
Derek, was the court ever at risk of being lost to us over the years?
Yes. Well, two recollections. One, in the 1980s, when we almost had to close up with following the GFC and all those sort of things that were happening, and we made loss after loss. And I always said to them that if you make three losses in a row, we're in real trouble. So we'd always timed it. So we make a big loss on one play and then make it up on the next. Well, we did make, in fact, make three losses in a row, and we were in trouble. So we had to take steps, and they really were, well, they were life-saving, but they were quite shattering. We had opened a studio theatre, which we called Court 2. That was immediately closed. The board acted very swiftly and well in the matter. Staff were reduced, and that was quite painful. And we put the price of seats up, and our audience was so loyal that they didn't blink an eyelid. And we got ourselves out of that mess quite successfully. And the next year, we made one of our biggest surpluses, over $200,000 we'd made. And that also was thanks to Elric's brilliant programming that dragged us out of that. The next episode that nearly sunk us was the earthquake. Perhaps Felicity can mention that.
Well, yes, that the first earthquake in September closed the theatre just briefly, and we got it all fixed, repaired, and got plays going again. But the February earthquake shut down the Arts Centre, shut down the Court Theatre. We had nowhere to perform. It was evident to all of us that unless we could find a venue, a permanent venue for the Court Theatre, or even a temporary venue, the theatre would close. There would, without any work for actors, they would all go north. You know, we'd start to lose audience support because the audiences had been very loyal. And so the board developed and designed the current premises, which were supposed to be for just 5 years, and I think they've been near 10 years now, in Addington, in a grain shed. We found the grain shed. Philip found the grain shed. Philip and Ross reckoned that we could put a box inside the grain store and in Addington, and it had plenty of parking, which, of course, the patrons love. And within 9 months, we'd built a theatre and were open. We were opened in December 2011. There seemed to be engineering difficulties almost every week, but we did it.
Derek, this word loyal has been used liberally through the interview, and I'm not surprised, because it's one of the aspects of the Court Theatre that's so striking, is that loyalty, those faithful audiences that have kept the theatre through good times and bad. What is it about the Court, do you think, that perhaps no other theatre really in the country at the moment has ever been able to do? That kind of fidelity for five decades. What's the Court secret?
Well, I don't know if I can tell you. If I could, you could set up other theatres somewhere else. But in the book, in the foreword, Sir Roger Hall poses the same question to himself, and he comes up with the fact that the success of the Court, one of the great successes, is the loyalty of the audience. And it just seems, it's a funny thing in Christchurch, because it's audiences here are extremely loyal to their own local arts, and not only the theatre, but the symphony orchestra and other things. You know, people just live to go to the performances and talk about them and discuss what they're going to see next. And it's almost like a sort of a village atmosphere when it comes to terms of supporting your local arts groups and arts institutions.
One of the great delights, Felicity, of the book for me was reading the interviews, so many interviews you've done, I don't know if you lost count, with people like the Ushers and, you know, those unsung heroes, the Ushers. But I love the stories, these Ushers who came decade after decade for the work, and it was a highlight of their week to come and help out.
It is, and it still is, and they still do. It was one of the things with great foresight they thought of in the very early days to have voluntary ushers. And without those volunteer ushers, I don't think the court could have survived. It certainly couldn't have paid them, as they remind us from time to time. And so it's that core of court supporters that provide the ushers for all the shows. And over the years, they've evolved. They used to be able to turn up in pretty much anything they liked, and then they evolved to a sort of a uniform where it was black and white. And now, yes, they're still very professional. A lot of them are retired, but they still manage to spring up and down the stairs. I think you'll find in the book one of them said that, you know, after, I think she was nearly 80 by the time she gave up, she said, oh, I started to feel the you know, running up and down the stairs was just getting a bit much. And the stairs at the new court, there's a lot of them, so good on her. But it's a core support base. The whole supporters, court supporters, is a base that fundraises. It provides suppers after opening nights. It's been doing that almost for 47 years. And they provide all sorts of backup that the theatre needs, as well as the ushers.
Derek, when you started writing effectively your memoir and the starting point for this book, and I'm very impressed by how much material you've held on to and went through. And this may be the hardest question for you, actually, Derek. What are some of the productions, when you started really thinking about those 50 years, those five decades, what are a couple of the productions that have stood out for you for whatever reason, really?
Well, of course, the best ones are the first one, which was the Prime of Miss Jean Brodie. The lead part in that was taken by Annette Facer. And Annette went on to star in a few other plays and also worked in the theatre as the company stage manager. And I spoke to her just the other day because she's coming up to Christchurch from where she lives in Dunedin now. And she's looking forward, as the lead in our very first play, to come and join us in the 50-year celebrations. So that's one play I do remember. I just remember lots and lots of plays. I can't pick one out because you think of all the comedies we put on. We used to rely on Alan Ayckbourn. Before Roger Hall came along, we put on Ayckbourn plays. And I remember, I travelled a lot in those days, I remember going to London and seeing the first Ayckbourn production that the new London Theatre, National Theatre, put on. And it was Bedroom Farce was the play. And that opened the new Olivia Theatre of the National. I went back and said, we've got to put this play on. It's fantastic. It's very funny. And you know what? Within 2 weeks, we got the rights for it. And this would be impossible now. Those days, we could get the rights for plays that have been great successes in the West End 2 or 3 months after that opened. And sure enough, we did Bedroom Farce back here, so I do remember that. But Alan Ayckbourn was overtaken by Roger Hall's great success. And I always remember Glide Time, when we walked into the theatre, we were given what looked like a government stores board manila folder with a brass clip in it. And that was the programme, and we all sat down and thoroughly enjoyed it. So those are two, anyway, that I remember.
Same problematic question for you, Felicity. Yes, you've been, you know, such a loyal patron as well as being on the board for all these years. What about a couple that stand out for you?
Well, I think I'm very much more of a, I love the Christmas musicals and the Christmas productions, mainly because they've always been an end-of-year family treat. All of us go along together, and now we have a pizza first and then watch the Christmas production. But listening to Derek talking about Alan Ayckbourn and some of the, like the British comedies used to do it for the audiences at the court, but they don't really anymore. It was really interesting to watch that a few years ago, I think they put on a series over 2 or 3 years, there were a series of British comedy that just didn't bring in the punt. People didn't like them. You know, word got out and they didn't come. And we had to realise, I think, that at long last, Kiwis love Kiwi plays, Kiwi comedies. We love seeing ourselves on the stage. And it hasn't just been the comedies that New Zealand playwrights have put on that we've loved. There's been a lot of quite serious plays that have done really, really well at the box office.
I guess in an ideal world you would have had your last chapter talking about the new home for the Court Theatre, this purpose-built theatre. That's still a ways away. But how does the future look? Having thought about the past and a bit about the present, how do you both think the future looks for the Court Theatre? Well, will it change greatly?
We did talk a bit about the new theatre, or rather Barbara George, the new chief executive, did. And they're very, obviously very much looking forward to that, and it's well through the planning stages. Ross Gumbly, who was the previous artistic director, is now in charge of making that happen, and they're all very confident that it will happen in a couple of years in the inner city, which, and a lot of the pundits say, well, you know, we actually really like the Court where it is now. Why does it have to move into town? There's a number of reasons for that. First of all, the inner city does need the theatre back in. When it was at the Arts Centre, it used to bring people into the Arts Centre at night and liven up the whole city block and the city centre. But on top of that, backstage, what the audiences see at the Court Theatre in Addington and the Grain Store looks fantastic. You know, they can get pizzas, there's a great bar, there's all, you know, sorts of front of house stuff looks fantastic. But backstage is ghastly. You know, everyone's still inside containers, shipping containers and little portacoms, and the lighting, the heating, the backstage where the set designers are is freezing cold in winter and boiling hot in summer. It's just unsustainable. So moving into town is definitely part of the Court's future. But I think what we've achieved by finding that 10-year stopgap with the Addington Theatre is that we've kept the audiences, we've kept the actors employed, and the loyal audiences will continue into the new venue and bring life to the city.
Derek, I'll wrap this up with a personal question for you, really, because over all of its different venues over the years, and I don't think I'd realised how many there were in the early time for the Court Theatre, it's very much been your second home. What does the Court mean to you?
Oh, it means an awful lot. It's been a part of a big part of my life, my professional life, and personal life too, because my wife and I both enjoy the theatre hugely. And even in the early days, my mother was one of the original wardrobe mistresses. So it's been a big part and a very, very rewarding part of my life. And although I was once upon a time on stage, I was very glad when I could act in some, at least to serve the theatre in some useful way behind the scenes and backstage. But it's been marvellous seeing it grow from level to level each time the theatre grows and develops. And I said to them for this last change when I was still on the board, I've been retired 3 years now, was that you've reached a plateau. Every plateau the theatre's reached, it's gone up and then developed a new one. So from the Arts Centre to the Shed. And now I said, now it's time for you to move up to the next development and see the theatre grow and develop.
Derek Hargreaves and Felicity Price. The History of the Court Theatre is published by Caxton. It's not out quite yet, I believe. The full interview, though, going up on our webpage, along with details of the birthday celebrations on the 21st of April. What are some of your Court Theatre productions and memories? Let us know. Standing room only at rnz.co.nz or text us 2101.